몸을 깨는 드미란 다스야 제나제나 살라카야 삭수스미르탄 제나타스마이 스위기르베나마 스위체이타니아마나비스탐 스타피톰 제나부텔레 사얌 루파카다마얌 다다티사 판단티캄 반스카파투비스차 크리파산누베이브차 페티타남 파베네교 바이스나베데나모나마 Usually, when I'm asked to give class, I end up speaking about philosophy because I love philosophy. But today will be different. Today, both of us, mostly Jagatrini Mataji, we will tell a story. And this story is, when I think about it even though I am one of the participants in the story, I think it is quite amazing. It is better than anything you'll see in the movies. Except there is no dancing. Oh yes, there is dancing. But there is a lot of drama. But I will tell you something very different from Bollywood movies. This story is true. Now, Jagatrini Mataji, she was an actress. And she'll be speaking about that. But one devotee, and she had begun chanting Hare Krishna, but just a little bit, and very casually, in 1970, in Sydney, Australia. She is from Australia. And she had made a movie with a very famous person at that time, whose name was Mick Jagger, who was in a rock and roll band. Very, very, very famous. The Rolling Stones. Very, very famous. And she had made a movie with him. And she was going to London, from Sydney to Los Angeles to London, for the grand opening of this movie, the premiere of the movie. And one devotee, whose name was Upendra Prabhu, in Sydney, Australia, gave her a pen. A simple pen. And do you know what he asked her to do with that pen? Do you know? Do you know? Do you know? Do you know? No. He asked her to take that pen, and when she was in Los Angeles, please give this pen to Srila Prabhupada, who was there. That was the end of her movie career. She got off the plane in Los Angeles with all, she had a suitcase full of, what? Clothes that she had just bought. And she had sent those clothes on to Heathrow Airport. Because she was only staying in Los Angeles for how long?
A week.
1 week. If you go to Heathrow Airport and ask for that luggage, it is still probably waiting there for her in Los Angeles. She never picked it up. She went to the temple and she went on Harinam Sankirtan. And how many devotees were chanting down Los Angeles Boulevard?
Well, we went to a park, and there was about 12 devotees.
Yes.
And Vishnujan was
there. Vishnujan was there. Vishnujan was there. He loved kirtan. And what happened?
And when I got in the van to go to the park...
See, they invited her. We're going on kirtan. so you should also come. She had come to the temple of, I'm sorry, to give the pen to Prabhupada.
They said, would you like to come to the park as well? So I said, all right, I'll come. So I got in the van and I thought, I wonder what they're all doing. Why are they all so enthusiastic? And then we went to the park and we had a kirtan. And it was so deeply moving that when I got back in the van, I thought to myself, I think I have to stay here for a little while and find out more about this.
She didn't tell everything. Was that the... She was crying and crying and crying. She was on the kirtan. Of course she wouldn't say that. But I will tell. Because the kirtan, Krishna's holy names, was so powerful. And through his holy names, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada said, I want you. And Gopinath was saying, I want you. And then after some days, and Mataji will fill in some of the story later, she finally got the chance to give the pen to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said to her,
first of all, he asked me what I did, what was my career, and I said at that time I was an actress. So he said, then you should put on plays for Krishna, because this will attract a different class of people. He said, now mostly we're only attracting hippies, young people who have no career, they're just in taking drugs, they've become a little lazy, a little hopeless in life. So they were interested in chanting Hare Krishna. But Srila Prabhupada said, if we present the culture of Krishna consciousness, we'll attract a higher class of people by doing that. So then he told me some pastimes about Lord Chaitanya. And at the very end, he said to me,
are you here traveling alone? With your family?
And I said, no.
For Prabhupada, it was inconceivable that it, 21 years old at that time, a young lady just traveling around alone. What would he say nowadays about what goes on? Are you traveling alone with your family? Are you traveling with your family?
No.
Prabhupada, are you married?
No.
Are you traveling alone?
Yes.
And then Prabhupada said,
I will find you a nice husband. And I was horrified. I was totally speechless.
The last thing she wanted. One time, this is a real sign of the times. One time I was in Los Angeles. So we were actually, we ended up being married in 1970. I was in Los Angeles years ago. And someone said, oh, how long have you been married? So at that time I said, 25 years. And they looked at me and said, to the same person? This is what it's like nowadays. But now, I will tell you something quite amazing, and it's true. Our marriage was arranged. The first day we saw each other was the day that we became married.
1 hour later.
1 hour later. I said this is a true story that is very hard to believe. Quite amazing. Now I will let you tell some more of your story.
So I was in America on a temporary visa. So I could only stay there for 6 months. So when I moved into the temple, I gave up everything I had. I gave them my ticket or my money, everything, because I didn't know what was going to happen next. So I didn't want to hold anything back, because if I did that, then it wouldn't be a full test. So I gave everything up, and I wandered, and then I met Prabhupada. That was after about 2 weeks in the temple, 3 weeks in the temple, and he gave me that piece of information, and I didn't tell anyone. I kept that to myself, what Srila Prabhupada had said. But 3 months or so later, in a very informal way, they decided to arrange for some marriages. And I came on the list of people who was eligible to be married.
One moment.
This will give you an idea also, this story. I could almost, at this point, almost 40 years later, I could say pastime almost. But this gives you an idea of what the Hare Krishna movement was like in 1970. On one side, it was quite amazing. For example, a young lady, successful actress, comes through. She gives up everything. Understand through this how potent Srila Prabhupada is. How powerful Prabhupada was. He touched people's hearts so deeply. So deeply, they were ready and willing to give up everything to please him and to please his Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and C.C. Radha and Krishna. One time, I was giving class in Vrindavan, and one Mataji named Parvati Mataji, who recently became very ill. We were talking in the class about the early days of the movement. And she had undergone something so heavy to start the temple, Radharasa Bihari Temple. So heavy. Because she was there. I don't know how many of you know the story. Also a pastime. But Gundas came. They were hired to break the temple at one point. And there were a few Western devotees there. And they were being beaten. They were protecting the deities. One Mataji, Matahili Mataji, the Gundas grabbed her. She was the pujari at that time. And they pulled her. A Mataji, a young lady, they pulled her by the hair. And she was screaming. She was protecting the deities. They pulled her by the hair, forcibly off the altar. And Mother Parvati was fighting with them. So I said to her, the old days were very special. Prabhupada's inspiration was so strong. And I said to her, what you could do when you're young, would you be willing to do it now? And without one second, because this is 30 years, no longer was she a 20-year-old Mataji, now she was 50, 55. Without one second of hesitation, she said, yes, in a moment I would do it for Prabhupada. So on one side was the incredible potency of Prabhupada to touch souls' hearts and to give them what they were really longing for. And on the other side was some very, very sincere souls. Very sincere souls. This is what the movement was like. We were young, inexperienced, We didn't know anything, practically speaking, but the devotees were ready to do anything for Prabhupada. Now you can continue.
So, alongside that, that the devotees were so sincere, which was certainly correct, they were also somewhat naive, because we were adopting a different culture, a culture that we had no idea of, how it worked, what you could do, what you couldn't do, how you did it, or anything. So, somebody came into the ashram and said, I want three of the ladies to get married this weekend for a Sunday feast program. So I chose this one, this one, and this one. And we've got this one, and this one, and this Prabhu over here. So I want you three, get ready, you're getting married on Sunday. So I thought to myself, this seems a little bit unorganized. And when they told me who it was, he was considerably shorter than me. And I thought to myself, I used to look around when I first joined, when I was still a little more vain than I am now, and I used to think, I look at the boys, and I used to think, there's this one boy has these very thick glasses on, and I used to think, he's a little plain. Maybe they should keep him back in the temple. He shouldn't go out, because if I met him on the street, I would never become a devotee, because he's a little ordinary. And they said to me, so this is the one we've chosen for you. And I thought to myself, there must be something I don't know about him. Because Prabhupada said he would find a nice husband, so I guess I just have to do this. So they came closer to the day, and they hadn't said anything to me. And the day came, and it didn't happen, and they hadn't even followed up. The temple president hadn't brought the subject up again. So then, sometime later, the other two girls got married, and nothing was said to me. So I said to them, why didn't you make that marriage? And they said, we wrote to Srila Prabhupada, and he said that the age difference was not sufficient. So he said it was unhygienic. This is what they told me. So they said he was not satisfied with the choice. So then I was still single. So I went on for some time after that, a couple more months, but my 6 month visa had only 2 months left, and I didn't know what I would do next. If I would go back to Australia, I would probably become an actress again. So I didn't know what to do. So then somebody said to me, there was one boy came through here a couple of months ago on his way to Japan. And he's a very good devotee, because he knows how to play the mridanga. You should marry him. That's all I knew. We were so innocent. We had to be protected by Krishna, because practically speaking, we didn't really know what we were doing. So then, again, it went into silence. Nothing more was said. The temple president said nothing, and another month went by, and again I went and asked him what's happening with this devotee in Japan, and he said, oh yes, we're working on it. And then a letter came with a ticket in it, and the ticket was for me to leave from America and go to Hong Kong. So I said, what is this? And they said, well, we want to start a temple in Hong Kong, and so therefore we thought, if you went and he went, you could meet and get married, and we start a temple. Very simple. Now, anybody sensible will either laugh or be horrified. Very simple, no problem. So I said to them, Prabhu, okay, if you tell me this is what I'm supposed to do. And so they told me yes. So then a Sunday morning came, and one devotee said to me, it's time now, I have to take you to the airport.
But you should tell the part where writing to your mother, and she said,
oh, yes.
You have to tell that part.
In the middle, after about 4 or 5 months, just after the marriage had been settled. A reporter came to see me at the temple from a tabloid called TV Week. It was a TV guide in Australia. And he'd come because he knew that I had been in this movie, Ned Kelly, and he wanted a story to find out what I was doing now. So he came and he interviewed me, and one devotee sat with me, hoping that, you know, it would be understandable what I was telling him. And I explained to him my choices and what I was doing and a little bit that I understood about Krishna consciousness. And I requested him, please, if possible, don't misrepresent what I'm saying, because I knew he could make it into anything peculiar, this story. And he was a gentleman, and he said that he would present everything properly. And by this time, I hadn't actually contacted my parents to tell them what I was doing. They were in Australia. And of course, you can just imagine, as I know now, they were full of anxiety. What is she doing? Where is she? What has she done? And all I had told them was, don't worry, I've become a Hare Krishna devotee. I gave them all my money and everything. Don't worry, I'm perfectly fine. Everything is all right, don't worry. And of course, they were very worried.
At that time, I was in Japan, and I was preaching in Tokyo, and the temple was in Shibuya-ku at that time. Go ahead. But I was asked to open the temple in Hong Kong.
So my mother, as she would normally do, she went shopping. She went down the street to buy her groceries and other things, and normally she would pick up this news magazine. It had all the times of all the programs on television, so she would buy this. So she came outside the shop, and she saw this headline, and it said, weird sect forces famous movie actress to marry Japanese monk.
Her mother doesn't have any idea what's going on. So in Australia, they put these headlines outside as advertisements. So she sees, oh, what an interesting advertisement. Weird sect forces famous actress to marry Japanese monk. I wonder what that's about. So she went into the store
and bought the TV Week and found out that the story was about me.
A daughter.
And she was horrified. And she couldn't do anything. And she wrote to me and she tried to contact me. And my aunt came because she was more well-to-do, and so she could come to America. So she came to visit me. And actually, only a couple of months ago, maybe 5 months ago, when I was visiting my mother in Melbourne, I found in her cupboard a big bag like this, full of letters that I had written to her. Just recently I found this same year. And in there, I found the letter that my aunt wrote to my mother after seeing me. It was very interesting. All these years, I had not known what she said to my mother. But she wrote to my mother, and she said, or my uncle wrote, and he said, that she seems to be fairly sane. They seem to be reasonably nice people. And if you just don't make too big an issue of it, keep everything quiet and calm, she'll probably get over it very soon. So my mother just had to keep quiet. So then my ticket arrived after 6 months in America, and it was a Sunday morning, and the devotee who was taking me to the airport said, pick up your things, let's go, we have to go to the airport. So I put together a small bag. In my bag I had a yellow sari, because in those days if you were married, you only wore yellow. If you were single, you wore saffron. So I had my yellow sari. I just had my ears pierced, because when you're married, you have to wear earrings. And I had just a few things in a small bag, and I packed it all up, and I got in the car, and then I turned to the devotee, and I said, Nandarani, I don't have any money. And she said, I'll have a look in the glove box. So I looked in the glove box and there wasn't any money. I said, Nandarani, I don't have any money. And she said, have a look in the back. And I looked in the back. She said, are there any Back to Godhead magazines there? I said, yes, there's about 8. She said, take them. That's enough. So I was amazed. I was thinking, 6 months ago, look at me. I was coming with all my belongings and all my possessions and all my plans for my life. And look at me now. I'm going back with a little suitcase with a rope around it and 8 Back to Godhead magazines. And I'm getting on a plane without any money. And she said to me, you don't need money on a plane. What do you need money for? They'll feed you. And at the other end, there'll be someone to meet you. You don't need any money. And I thought, this is an international flight and no money. So I got off in Hawaii and I sat in the transit lounge and I sat next to people and talked to them and I gave them a magazine and they gave me $1. So when I arrived in Hong Kong, I was really proud of myself because I had 8 American dollars. And on the way, just as we were coming down to land in Hong Kong, I was thinking to myself, because being a movie actress is such a glamorous kind of a thing, and you get very romantic, and as I said, quite vain, and you're always thinking about your body and other people's bodies and so on. So I was thinking, I wonder what my husband is going to be like. I wonder if he's going to be very handsome. I wonder if he's going to be like this, like that. And I was just thinking. And then the thought came into my mind, entered my thoughts. You might get off the plane and there'll be nobody there. And then I became a little sober. I started being a little more serious. So I was chanting my rounds and I got off the plane and looked left and right. And sure enough, there was nobody there. True. And so then I went, I didn't know what to do. There was nobody there. I was in Hong Kong. Everything was written in Chinese. And I didn't know what to do. I had my $8 and my little suitcase. And so I went to the policeman because then the airports were much less sophisticated than they are now. There was a little police booth. So I went to the policeman and I said, I'm looking for this person. His name is... And I gave his name. And they said, well, where's he staying? And I said, I don't know. He gave me this address, American Express. And they said, that's a business. He can't be staying there. And I said, oh, well, that's all I know. And they said, who is this person? And I said, I'm going to marry him. And the Chinese policeman looked at me quite horrified. And I just smiled at him and I said, he said, American Express is an office. It will be open tomorrow morning at 9. You'll have to sleep somewhere in the airport. So I took my little suitcase and I went to sleep on a couple of the benches. Of course, in India, everybody does that, but not in Hong Kong. So I slept at the airport and in the morning they rang American Express and passed on a message that I had arrived. And then another devotee, the one who was to marry us, he came down and picked me up from the airport and took me to meet my husband-to-be.
And Prabhupada, 1, 2, 3. He said that Jagatrini Mataji had performed 3 great austerities for him. One, she had given up her career. If you have nothing, it's easy to give it up. But to give up when you have something is more difficult. So that was the first austerity. The second was, on my order, she went to Hong Kong. Such a difficult place. Raise your hand if you've ever been to Hong Kong. Very, very materialistic place, isn't it? Very intense, intensely materialistic. In Chinese, what the Hong Kong people say is, Mo Tsin Mo Gong, which means no money, no talk. If money isn't involved, I have nothing to say. Very materialistic place. And that was the second austerity. And the third was me. Getting married on Prabhupada's order. And when, of course, marriage, when you're young and dreaming, you think, oh, my marriage is going to be like this, my life is going to be like this, and everything is so wonderful and this and that. But life is never like that. It cannot be like that. And marriage cannot be exactly like that either. But always what keeps and kept and keeps our marriage together is that it will be very displeasing to Srila Prabhupada if anything happens. Prabhupada, if she becomes very angry at me and says, I'm leaving, then I think, uh-oh, Prabhupada won't be pleased with this. Because the essence of married life isn't enjoyment, it's actually duty. It's duty. That one takes care of the other person and serves the other person for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada, for the pleasure of Krishna. If we go into life, if we go into marriage, business, anything, thinking that it's going to satisfy us, we'll be tremendously disappointed. And we'll end up changing our marriage partner, our business, our this, our that, searching, searching, searching. In fact, we'll end up traveling from body to body to body throughout the universe, searching for that situation that will make us happy. But Krishna explains, Abrahma Bhuvanaloka, Puna to Arjuna, that no situation in the material world, regardless of how perfect it is, no situation can bring us happiness. But what brings us happiness is if we have a deep sense of being a servant of Krishna and a servant of Krishna's servants, of the devotees. And then we act in that mood. That brings happiness to the soul. So that's a bit of marriage advice for those who are either married and have not learned this yet or will one day be married. Become married, do business, be a brahmachari, be a housewife, be this, be that, as service. To please Krishna, to please our Guru Maharaj. Don't try to become the enjoyer of anything in this world. Don't try to be the enjoyer of anything in this world, because we cannot enjoy anything in this world. Because to enjoy, you have to control everything. Therefore, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, when defining the demonic mentality, the asura bhav, he says, Ishwaraham, aham bogi. Because to be the bogi or the enjoyer, you have to be the Ishwara. And who in this world can control? We cannot control anything. There is no one who is free. We are all controlled. Only the Parameshwara is Swatantra, independent. Everyone else is controlled. We are controlled. We are tiny. We are insignificant. So what is the plan for happiness? What is the plan for peace in this world? It is to place oneself under the control of Krishna and act for His pleasure. And even if one enters into that with some naivety, some simplicity of heart, not really knowing what it's going to be like to place yourself in Krishna's hands. And in fact, usually when we become devotees and give everything, there is romanticism and idealism in the heart. And things, even if we give everything to Krishna, they will never turn out exactly according to our plans. It cannot. It cannot. Life cannot be like that. But what we learn to do, and what the great lesson of life is to learn to depend on Krishna. Gotripte varanam tata. To place ourselves in Krishna's hands. Okay, Krishna. You want to do this with me? There is some mercy in your choice. You want to do that with me? There is mercy in it. There is your kindness and your protection in that. And I think that if we go through life and it takes a going through life actually, because we can read something, we can study something, but it takes going through life trying to apply the principles that we read about and study about and hear about. It takes going through life before we can actually we can actually put ourselves in Krishna's hands. So when we do that, when we place ourselves in Krishna's hands, there was one time during our Hong Kong experience when Jagatwini Mataji arrived, she said she had $8. And that was basically what we had. And after a while, somehow or another, by book distribution, by asking donations, there was one time after we had been married for several months, but not more than that, we had collected $250, which at that time seemed like a lot of money. $250. And we were trying to get our own place. Up to that time, we were living in a guest house in horrible, horrible circumstances. And we had taken that $250 and put it as a down payment to rent a flat and a small apartment that was going to be the first Hong Kong temple. And then somehow or another, that money became tied up. And we couldn't get it back. And we couldn't get the apartment either. And for 2 weeks, we had nothing. No, excuse me. We had $8, which is in rupees. I don't know what that translates to. But it's not very much. It's maybe 50 rupees, 60 rupees. For 2 weeks, we had 60 rupees. And during that time, I would say that was the time I was least in anxiety about money in my whole life, because I didn't have any to be in anxiety about. During that time, someone would come and say, "Oh, can I pay the rent?" During that time, not before that time, and someone would come and bring vegetables. And someone would come and bring some milk. What else do you remember? But it was the most amazing thing. These things really shouldn't be talked about. But it was truly amazing. And I began to think, this is completely unnatural. Because it wasn't happening before. And actually speaking, after 2 weeks, the $250 was returned, and I was a wealthy man again. And then immediately, the supply stopped because I could pay my own way. During that time, it was so amazing. I just simply had to accept that despite my immaturity, despite whatever doubts I may have, despite the fact that I had been chanting Hare Krishna for perhaps 2 years, but despite the fact that Mataji wasn't even initiated yet, but there we were, somehow or another, in our immaturity, in our naivety, doing something for the pleasure of Prabhupada, our spiritual master. And Krishna was taking care of us. So tangibly, every day, every day. So I began to really understand that yes, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Savalokamaheshwaram Suridam Savabhutaram. Surit means near to the heart. Near to the heart. Suridam Savabhutanam, that Krishna's there. Gyatvamam Shantim Rikshati. If I am trying to be the Ishwara, I'm going to be continuously in anxiety because there's no way I can control reality. The universe is determined to teach us this one fact, that we are not in control, nor are we the enjoyers. The universe will teach us this again and again and again. And therefore, everyone is in anxiety in this world. Because of this tendency, Ishwaraham, Aham Bhogi, Siddham, Balavan Sukhi, because of this tendency of mine to forget that I am a servant of Krishna, servant of Prabhupada, Gopi Bhakta Parakamalaya Dasa Dasana Das, servant of the servants. Because of this deep tendency, which is born of what? Yes. Say it loudly. False ego. Huge, huge false ego. Little soul. Huge false ego. Insignificant soul. Huge false ego. Trying to convince everyone that the universe should be centered around me. Therefore, so unlimited anxiety. And the cure for that is Gotripte, to place ourself in the hands of Krishna. But very difficult to do this in this world because the false ego is big. But this is the only cure. This is the only cure. We have to actually become devotees. Because we think of so many things that will protect us in our life. But ultimately, what do we have that will protect us? And that is whatever devotion, whatever service, whatever we have done, and whatever kindness that we can evoke from exalted persons like Srila Prabhupada and his servants. Whatever kindness can be directed towards us by them, ultimately that is all we have. And it doesn't make any difference if other people know about it. It's not a matter of gaining the acclaim of others and being recognized by others. It is just simply a matter of serving in such a way that somehow or another the glance of Srila Prabhupada comes upon us. That is what is to be gained in this world. What else will we gain? A value that's lasting. And it doesn't make any difference, or rather, to put it another way, there are thousands of ways, unlimited ways, of gaining mercy. And to give you an example, this is something that is very, very wonderful for Jagatwini Mataji and myself. That one time we were in the Philippines, and that is not in and of itself wonderful or fortunate, but there was something very wonderful, fortunate about our being in the Philippines. And what was that? Who can understand what that was? Yes, Prabhupada was there, yes. And Prabhupada was staying in the Manila Intercontinental Hotel. And there was a program, even though there was martial law at that time, that the president, Marcos, Ferdinand Marcos, he had declared martial law. And you weren't allowed to have gatherings of people. Prabhupada was coming, and the devotees, Sudama Viparamaraj, he had made a big program. And approximately 500 people, 600 people came, and the hall was full. But right before the program started, just two people were sitting with Srila Prabhupada in his room. And what was it like to be sitting with Prabhupada alone? It was, on one hand, it was a little bit frightening because he was very, so powerful, but it was so sweet and he was so attractive. And Prabhupada himself was very, very peaceful, very, very, always very deep, very deep. How deep, of course, I cannot say, but very deep. So he was just sitting, and he picked up a little wooden flag that happened to be on the desk. And he picked it up, and it broke. And like a little boy, he laughed. Just see. That was the implication. Just see. Everything in this material world is going to break. He just laughed in a very simple and deep way. And then he said,
"It is my desire that all the souls in the universe go back to Godhead. You please help me with this."
Now, that is a very big desire. Do you think you might be able to find something to do in that service? Something, a position for you of some service to do within that desire? Do that with devotion for the pleasure of Prabhupada, which is the pleasure of Prabhupada's servants, which is the pleasure of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Find some service that you can do with full devotion, with no false ego, "This is for me. But let me do this for you, for your pleasure. I may feel like doing it. I may not feel like doing it." That's life. It's not like every day you feel like doing anything. Working, being married, being taken care of children, doing that service, doing this service. It's not like it's fun. Only when you're 6, 7, 8 years old, you look at your life that's going to be, and you can imagine you'll be a prince or a princess and everything is going to be fun. But life is simply not like that. It is duty. And duty meant to be offered for the pleasure of an exalted person. And if we, by a little bit of sincerity in that way, do something for his pleasure, then perhaps some mercy from him will come to us, and then we are very fortunate. And that is what will protect us at the time when it is to leave this world. And it will protect us in our life. And that is what is to be gained. There is nothing else to be gained in this world. Shushusho Sharadanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Sian Mahatsevyo Vipro Purna Tirta. The taste for being with C.C. Radha Gopinath, it comes from the pleasure of Mahatseva, of the great souls. On that level, there's nothing we can do except we sincerely become a servant. And if we can't do that 24 hours a day, at least sometimes we should think, I'm trying all the time to be the master, and so far it is not working. So let me try and be a servant, at least for today, at least for this hour, at least. And then it doesn't make any difference, cleaning the floor, doing the puja. But let me tell you what happened after. That was one little thing that Prabhupada said to us in a few minutes, but so important for us. And I hope it is something that you will remember, that there is something for you to do in the great mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Prabhupada. There is a place for you to do some service, because the universe is very big and there are so many unlimited living entities. So you can help. But after that, Prabhupada went down to the meeting. 500 people there, and he gave a lecture. And at the end of the lecture, and most of the people there, they were mostly of Indian origin or not? Mostly of Indian origin in the Philippines. And after the lecture, one man stood up. And he began asking a question. Prabhupada said, any questions? Prabhupada always would ask for questions at the end of a lecture. Any questions? And one man immediately stood up and he began talking. And it was clear to the 6 or 7 or 8 devotees that were there that he just wanted to ask his question and talk just to hear his own voice and to show off his great knowledge. So he started talking, and it sounded some impersonal Mayavad philosophy, but it didn't really make any sense what he was saying. He just started talking and talking, a small lecture of his own. And Prabhupada just sat on the Vyasasana. And the devotees were getting a bit upset. And one devotee, he said, no, let's watch how Prabhupada deals with this. So the person went on asking his question for 1 minute, 2 minutes. And finally, Prabhupada said, are you finished? And the man said, no. And he kept on talking more and more and more and more. And after another 2 minutes, Prabhupada said, are you finished? And the man said, no. By this time, the audience, all the other people were there, were getting nervous and fidgety, and what is this person? But he said no. And Prabhupada let him go on for another minute, another 2 minutes. And then Prabhupada said, "Are you finished?" And the man said, "Yes." And Prabhupada said, "Then sit down." And everyone went, "Hari Bol!" Everyone cheered. Prabhupada was very expert. Because if he would have stopped the silly man in the beginning, the audience maybe would have said, "Oh, he won't let an ask." They would have taken his side. Prabhupada was very expert. He waited for everyone to understand the actual quality of the man. And then he said, "Sit down, be quiet." Very expert. Very deep, unlimitedly deep, and unlimitedly expert. Unlimitedly sweet, and unlimitedly heavy when he wanted to be heavy. We have tasted both sides. When Prabhupada wanted to be heavy, it was unlimitedly heavy. When Prabhupada was sweet, it was unlimitedly sweet. But the heaviness, the strength, although when you were being strongly chastised, it didn't feel, you could not find any sweetness in the universe, you could not sleep, you could not think, you just could tremble. Yes?
Yes.
In 1974, Prabhupada visited Hong Kong. And he was very heavy because I was very nonsensical. I wasn't acting properly. And he was very strong, very strong. But after 2 days of being there, he took me aside and said, "How is Jagatarini? How is she doing with this medicine?" The very, very, very heavy and bitter medicine of chastisement. "How is she doing?" And I said, "I don't think she is doing very well with it, Prabhupada." He said that.
He said I was a borderline case.
There is an operation going on. We are not sure if the patient is going to survive. We can laugh now, but then it was not very funny. So he said, "Bring her in to the room." "No, no, no, no. You won't be able to do it." So she came in. He brought her in. And then, without saying anything, Prabhupada took his hand and he went like this. And he took a ring off of his hand. And he gave it to Jagatarini Mataji. "Now you have to hold up your hand. There it is." Prabhupada took that. Because behind that, just like the father, does your father sometimes chastise you? No. You come over to me later, I'll chastise you. I'll find something. That's the pleasure, because I was a teacher for many years. That's the pleasure. But behind that chastisement, you know, Prabhupada once told a story. You should tell your father later. You say, "My dear father, what can I say to you? But you should chastise me. You please chastise me." Okay? You tell him. Prabhupada once told the story. He said it's a story, but maybe it happened. That there was one young man whose father died. And He was brought up by his grandmother. Maybe some of you know this story. And whatever the boy did, his grandmother, who was so much older, he said, "Very good boy, very good boy." But then the boy, he started stealing. He came home with some things. "Oh, very good boy, very good boy." Then he started coming home with bigger things. "Oh, very good boy." Whatever the boy did, his grandmother said, "Very good boy." He started stealing more and more. And then he turned to murder. And he started killing people. Whatever the boy did, of course, the grandmother didn't know everything. "Very good boy, very good boy." And then one day, he had killed someone. And he got caught. And he was tried. And the judge found him guilty and sentenced him to hang. Death by hanging. And just before he was about to face his sentence, they asked him, "Do you have any last request?" And he said, "Yes, I want to speak to my grandmother. Just the two of us, very close." So they brought his grandmother, and he said, "I want to tell you something. Bring your ear close. I want to whisper something." And then he went, "Ow!" And he bit off her ear. And he said, "If you would have chastised me when I was young, I wouldn't have been in the situation that I am in now, to be hung tomorrow." And you wouldn't be crying right now. So chastisement, of course, when it's such a nice devotee, I'm sure there is no need for any chastisement. But sometimes, at least in my case, Prabhupada, he didn't want me, he wanted to put a limitation on how nonsensical I could become. He was very kind in that way. But we can't end a lecture with such a heavy point. We have to end with something sweet. You have a sweet?
Do I?
I ask you. Do you have a sweet?
Oh, I have one story. It's not exactly a sweet.
Oh, but
it's a little bit embarrassing. But it's a little sweeter than that. In 1972, I was with Srila Prabhupada in New Zealand. And he was traveling to New Zealand from Australia and then on to other places, eventually to India. And so there was no temple in New Zealand, and they were just opening one. So he was going to different places and giving lectures. And one of his lectures was in a very small house that had been turned into an art gallery. So Srila Prabhupada sat on a very simple room with a simple rug on the floor and a simple chair, not a Vyasasan, and very formal. And he sat down and the people were sitting in front of him. And he started to speak. And the first thing that he said was that Krishna is the supreme artist. And he wanted to make a particular point because he was speaking to people who were interested only in art. That's why they had come. So he was speaking in this way, speaking about how he has made the beauty of the birds and the beauty of a rose. And an artist will paint a rose, but who made the rose that he's painted? Nobody asks who made the original rose. So he was making these points very nicely. And meanwhile, in 1972, I had only been a devotee for a couple of years. And it was a little hard to understand Srila Prabhupada's Indian accent. So when he would start to speak, I would listen as hard as I could, but after some time I would become a little drowsy because it was difficult to pay attention. So we were sitting like this on the side, and Srila Prabhupada was sitting on a chair, and the people were sitting in front in this just this small room. And I remember I was sitting there trying to stay awake, and gradually I had sort of hunched over, and I was quite sleepy. I didn't know what was being said. But all of a sudden I heard Srila Prabhupada speaking. It came through my slumberous state, and he was saying, "Just like this girl. This girl was a famous ballet dancer. She was traveling all over the world, earning millions and millions of dollars." And this came in my ear and I thought, oh no. He's not talking about me, because none of it was actually true. But Srila Prabhupada wanted to make a point, so he started saying, "She was a famous ballet dancer, she was earning millions of dollars, she was doing this, she was doing that, and here I am sound asleep." And so very, very slowly and carefully, because I realized what was happening, I raised myself up to an appropriate position for everybody's eyes to be looking at. And I sat there looking rather embarrassed as Srila Prabhupada went on, and he said, "She was earning millions of dollars and she was dancing and doing so many things." He said, "But now she has given it up and she is dancing in a different way." And then he went on to speak in this way to glorify the power of the Krishna consciousness process. So I felt really embarrassed, needless to say, because there I was and Prabhupada was there. And we came home, and in my mind and my heart, I felt not very happy with what had taken place. So I came into Srila Prabhupada's room. We were staying in a small house just before taking rest. And I was still feeling like this. So I paid my obeisances and I looked at him, and I was wondering if he had seen that I was sound asleep while he was speaking. So he said to me, he said, "Jagatarini?" And I said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." And I was feeling quite flat. And he said, "Did you like my lecture?" And I just sat there and I thought, now what do I say? And I couldn't think what to say, because if I say yes, it sounds as if I was awake and I wasn't. And if I say I was asleep, that would be very disheartening. And so I sat there for a few minutes not saying anything. And then I looked at Srila Prabhupada like you'd look at your father. And I said, "Yes?" With a kind of a doubtful intonation, just in case I should cover myself, in case he was about to chastise me. But actually, he hadn't even noticed that I was asleep. And he said, "Yes," he said, "this was such an important lecture, speaking to these people about Krishna as the supreme artist," he said. "So go immediately and you tell them that they should send this, they should get the copy on the tape of this lecture, and they should send it, Pradyumna should send this to Los Angeles, and they should make a book out of this particular lecture. It was such an important subject." So then I was given some service, so then I paid my obeisances, and I could see there was no tension in his mind, and so I left the room feeling very peaceful. So this is a little bit sweeter than the last story.
Why don't you tell the story about in Sydney with the reporter came?
Oh, now I have to tell an embarrassing story. We will finish off with a very, very embarrassing story. Because as you might have been hearing, speaking about being an actress, naturally enough, most of the people who were my friends, they thought this was quite a glamorous thing to be, because materialistic people think that being an actress is a really, it's an exciting life. And you don't have to work in a boring old office, and you don't have to do so many things that get dull over time. You get to do all kinds of new and exciting things. So even though I had become a devotee in 1972, 2 years later, I was still perhaps somewhat under the impression that what I had been doing before I became a devotee was something that was actually wholesome. It was something useful to the world. So Krishna had a plan to teach me something. So one day, Srila Prabhupada was visiting in Sydney. And also that particular day, a newspaper reporter came to the temple. And he was doing an article about Krishna consciousness and how it was spreading in Sydney. So I thought to myself, maybe I should let him know that I had had some background. So I started to speak to him. And immediately he thought it was a very interesting story. That here I was, I had been a Sydney actress in this movie, and now I was living in the temple. This was very significant to him. So he asked me lots of questions, and he went away. And the next day, he published an article in the daily newspaper. It was on the second page, fortunately. And the heading was, Ned Kelly's girlfriend is Hare Krishna now. And underneath this very big heading, there were two pictures. And one picture, the first picture, it was a before and an after. And the after picture was very nice. I had a sari on, my head was covered. And actually I was doing some seva at the temple. And I looked very clean and very nice, very pious and so forth. But the first picture, I won't be able to explain to such a pious audience exactly what the picture was like, but practically speaking, it was a picture that you would take of someone in the bathroom. Practically, I had almost no clothes on. And this was what acting means. If you go and you look at the billboards around in the city here, you look at the advertisements, you look at the women, even Bombay women, what to speak of Western women, you'll see they're dressed very scantily in order to make themselves appealing and to sell a product or to attract the minds of men so that they will go and watch the cinema. So there I was, dressed in something that practically only covered the middle portion of my body. And long loose hair and black makeup on and big black eyelashes and dark lipstick on. And when I saw it, this picture, I don't even remember when it was taken. And Srila Prabhupada was upstairs when the newspaper came in my hands. And I was just absolutely horrified. And I looked at it and my heart began to shudder. This was what I was doing. And so then I said to the devotee, although I knew he wouldn't do what I said, please don't take this upstairs and show it to Srila Prabhupada, this picture of me. And he just laughed. He thought it was humorous. So he took the newspaper and he went upstairs to show it to Srila Prabhupada. And I stayed downstairs for maybe 1 hour, 2 hours, meditating on my life and what I had been doing in my life. And I was sitting there, waiting, very nervous, feeling very embarrassed. And finally, he came downstairs because it was time for Srila Prabhupada's lunch. And it was not even an important thing to him. But to me, it was very much significant. So I said to him, Prabhu, what did Srila Prabhupada do when you showed him that magazine article, newspaper article? And he said, Srila Prabhupada looked at it for some time. And then he pointed to the second picture. And he pointed to the second picture and he said, in this picture, she looks very beautiful. And then he pointed to the first picture and he said, in this picture, she looks very morose. And then he thought for a minute and then he said, but a materialistic person, they would see it the other way. And then he dismissed it completely. So then, this was in 1972, I was just staying, my husband was in Hong Kong still, and I was just visiting in Sydney. So when he came downstairs, I felt again very embarrassed. And he sat down to put on his shoes to go to the temple, and I came and paid my obeisances. And he looked at me, and he said to me, he said, you are very fortunate, he said. Krishna has saved you from so much nonsense. And I was able to understand at that point, yes, so much nonsense. So generally speaking, I was saying to the devotee Prabhu who is introducing, generally speaking, I don't speak about that part of my life. It's as if it's like a dream, like a movie that I watched once a long time ago. But when Srila Prabhupada wanted to use it for the purpose of preaching, to attract people who may be interested in something like that, and even enlarge it, famous movie actress earning millions of dollars, dancing, all sorts of things. He would use this subject to preach, to try to shake somebody who was very drawn to these things and try to bring them further to say, look, here's somebody who had this and they've given this up. This is just nonsense. So to encourage them, I had to sit there and have Srila Prabhupada make up so many stories, fanciful stories, in order to present this subject matter. So this is all I have to say. Thank you.
Shall I tell one more? This is, Prabhupada again was very expert. But this is a different kind of expert than his getting a room full of 500 people to be on his side by saying, sit down. This is Prabhupada's expertise in stealing a heart. That when Prabhupada was in Hong Kong, there was some problem in ISKCON during that time. 72. And in my childish way, how old was I then in 1972? 25 years old. In my childish way, I wanted to encourage Prabhupada. It was a nice thought, but I was just a baby. So I bought a ring for Prabhupada. 24-karat gold ring. And I had inscribed on it, Jai ISKCON. So, when Prabhupada visited Hong Kong, I presented him with that ring. And then, by Krishna's arrangement, Prabhupada went to Tokyo, Japan. And he spent 2 weeks there. And Prabhupada only spent a few days in Hong Kong at that time. One night, actually, that time. So one of the days while Prabhupada was in Tokyo, Sudama Prabhu was massaging Prabhupada, putting mustard oil on Prabhupada's body and putting sandalwood oil on Prabhupada's head and massaging him. And it was just Sudama sitting there and myself with Srila Prabhupada. And Sudama was massaging. And suddenly, he saw a ring on Prabhupada's finger. And he said, oh, Prabhupada, you have a new ring. Again, I was sitting there with Sudama and Prabhupada. And Sudama said to Prabhupada, who gave you that ring? And Prabhupada just turned. He looked at me. And he said, oh, someone. Now, who will explain the rasa in that? If he would have said, oh, you all know, you're all Indian and indirect. You know how to do everything indirectly. How to bring up someone's heart so sweetly, but indirectly like that. If he would have said, oh, Brijan gave it to me,
That would have been one effect in my consciousness. I would have gone... But he made it the most intimate secret, just between me and him. He and me. Yeah. Huh? Now it's separation, but then it was something else. Just like when the coward boys were wandering with Krishna in the forest one day, all morning, and they were thinking that Krishna was hungry. So what did they say? Oh, Krishna, you're so hungry, let us go get something to eat. No, they didn't speak like that. They said, because then what would Krishna have said? What would Krishna have said? Krishna, you're hungry. Let's go get something to eat. What would Krishna have said? He would have said, no, no, no problem. I'm not hungry at all. Just like if someone comes into your house and you say, are you hungry? To them, and what do they ever say? Yes, I'm hungry. Please give me something to eat. No. So the coward boys didn't say, oh, Krishna, you must be hungry. You should have something to eat. Rather, they said, oh, Krishna, we are so hungry now. Our bellies aren't full. We've been out herding the cows all morning. We are so hungry, we need something to eat. And nearby, there is a forest. Well, they did it two times, actually. One time, the forest of Talavan was nearby. Oh, the fragrance of the tal fruit. It is being pulled by the easterly winds in this direction. Oh, Krishna, we can just... And the tal fruits have fallen to the ground. But no one will go there and take them. Do you know why? There is one asura there whose name is Danuka. Anyway, it's a long story. But also with the boys in the neighboring village where the Brahmins were, and the Brahmins were performing the sacrifice, and the Brahminis were there. They said, oh, Krishna, we are so hungry. But we should always know, when talking about Braja, we should always know that whatever seems to be going on, there is only one thing going on. The devotees are thinking, how can I please Krishna? How can I please Krishna? The gopis, they're combing their hair, they're looking in the mirror and doing this and that. Just like ordinary people may do that. But just the opposite of the ordinary is going on. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains this very clearly in Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is the qualification for going to Vrindavan, for being in Vrindavan. There can be only one thing going on. Oh, how can I please Krishna? How could I please Krishna? How could I please Krishna? One thing only. So indirect way of speaking is more cultured and it brings more sweetness in the relationship, more rasa comes. So Prabhupada was an expert at bringing this, the rasa in the relationships. Very sweet. Very sweet. Okay. You have listened so attentively for so very long. So now you should get some other kinds of sweets. Because it's time for prasadam, yes? Kirtan, another kind of sweet. Yes, just different varieties of sweets. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sisi Radha Gopinath Bhaktivinoda ki jai.
No.
No.
Okay.
No. Because what happens if I believe you? Then what will happen to me? Better you should chastise me.
I'm serious. I already have big false ego.